join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Starting Wednesday on the Noon Book Hour, A Dog's Way Home by W. Bruce Cameron. This is a remarkable story of one endearing dog's journey home after she is separated from her beloved human. With 400 miles of dangerous Colorado wilderness separating one brave dog from her beloved person, Bella sets off on a seemingly impossible and completely unforgettable adventure home. A Dog's Way Home is a beautifully told, charming tale that explores the unbreakable bond between us and those we love. This is a fantastic and exhilarating journey of the heart that brilliantly speaks to the incredible power of love and resilience of spirit that tie us together. A Dog's Way Home by W. Bruce Cameron. Starting Wednesday at noon and Thursday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 75 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Thank you for listening to Enabled this week. First, you will hear about a VIP, a very interesting person, followed by information about vision rehabilitation and paratransit, which were very important to our VIP of the day. The title of today's program is He Don't See So Good. Well, my instinct as a retired English teacher is to get out my red pen and correct that grammar, but I will let it stand because that is the title of a chapter in a book by Margaret Barnhart, and this is the story of her husband, Charles Barnhart. He Don't See So Good. Her book is titled Inspirational Stories of the Visually Challenged, and the title of the chapter, once again, is He Don't See So Good, Charles Barnhart's story. Do you suppose I might hold a record for ways to meet a husband, as in lying naked on his massage table, covered with sheets, exactly the way he told me? This was my first ever massage. I was nervous. The fact that Charlie was a blind masseur made it somehow easier. Having left the room while I prepared myself on the table, he returned. We began talking. His daughter had just moved out of town, and he was disturbed because, since he was blind, he counted on her to drive him to various locations where he paid bills, grocery shopped, and went to church. He began to drink heavily, but never missed a day of work. Charles J. Barnhart was born August 22, 1935. It was a home delivery by what's called a country doctor outside the small town of Piqua, Ohio. Charlie lived in Piqua and then Troy, Ohio, where I met him. His entire life was spent living in these two towns, although he did ride north to Sydney, Ohio, and south to Cincinnati. He traveled once to Iowa, where his first wife was from. At the age of three, Charlie moved in with his grandmother because his mother had been killed in an automobile accident. His father survived but worked full-time and was an alcoholic, therefore unable to care for a child. Charlie's third grade class had just gone out to recess when his lights went out. In that moment, he became totally blind. He saw neither light nor shadows. His optic nerve died that day. His grandmother decided that she could not be responsible for this active blind child, as she was an older woman who would raise 12 children of her own. He remained close to her until her death. The Miami, Ohio County Children's Home took him in and enrolled him in the School for the Deaf and Blind in Columbus, Ohio. But first he was taken to Fort Hays Military Hospital, where they determined his blindness was a result of being born with congenital syphilis. He was given penicillin around the clock for, as they say, a long time. His body healed, but his blindness could not be cured. The following quotation from Scripture is relevant here. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. This is from John chapter 9, verse 3. While at school, Charlie had many adventures, such as the pickle-eating contest. Every student was given a large dill pickle to see who could eat it the fastest. Charlie was aware of the open window behind him, and he decided to throw his pickle out the window and be the winner. However, the window was only partially open, and his hand hit the frame, causing a break in his thumb joint. It was not taken care of medically, so he went through life with an out-of-joint thumb, a forever reminder of the day he tried to cheat. One day, the blind children were taken downtown to the Lazarus department store that was six stories high. They were told to go to the escalator using their canes. Charlie had never heard of an escalator or an elevator, but he learned. In school, he mastered Braille and learned to travel with a white cane. He especially loved math and history. When the school was on holiday, Charlie lived in the children's home, and you can imagine the stories he had to tell about that. When in his mid-teens, Charlie would be taken to a street corner with nothing but his white cane and a backpack filled with brooms, dustpans, greeting cards, and other assorted items for him to sell. He was pointed in the right direction, and on his own, he was expected to find the entrance to the homes. That took courage, and he did this for 3 years, with no cell phone. Of course, he told stories about the day he walked onto a freshly poured concrete sidewalk because his cane went under the rope designed to keep people off. And then there was the day he went up to a house, rang the doorbell, and met the butler. Heading out, he went to the next walkway, and since there was no doorbell, he knocked on the door. The same man answered the door of the same house. In addition, there were the walks into telephone poles and unexpected dangers of such things as tricycles left on the sidewalk. This was his life until he turned 17 and decided to leave school before graduation. His father had a small trailer on his property, and Charlie moved in. In the winter, it was so cold that soda and beer stored under the bed would freeze. An aunt who lived nearby would always introduce him as, "This is my nephew Charles. He don't see so good." The state of Ohio provided support to the disabled. The first job they prepared Charlie for was to be an X-ray developer. He didn't like that idea because he loved to talk and didn't want to be cooped up alone in a room developing X-rays. Next, he was trained to work at the Miami County, Ohio Courthouse in Troy, Ohio, where he had a vending stand from which to sell coffee, newspapers, snacks, and other assorted items. Of course, he handled money and never found anyone cheating him. He loved meeting and talking with the lawyers and judges. Finally, he found his calling. He was trained to give massages by a licensed massage therapist at the local YMCA. He worked there and independently for 35 years. In all of those years, he knew of only one time someone cheated him, telling him that a $1 bill was a five. Since he folded the various denominations in different ways, he knew how much cash he had. He went to purchase something and didn't offer the right amount. When the client he suspected came in again and handed him a bill, he went to the front desk and asked what denomination it was. This was the culprit. She cried, promised never to do it again. When Charlie was 18, he was introduced to and ultimately married a woman named Hilda, who had been born with spina bifida. She was 30 years old and was using a wheelchair. Both legs had been removed by this time. She never went to school, but she cooked and baked great cookies. Her sister taught her to read. She made a deal. She said, "Marry me, and I will be your eyes if you will be my wheelchair pusher." So he agreed. Charlie and Hilda had one child whom they named Robin Rose, who lives in Tennessee and keeps an eye on her three children and four grandchildren. Over the years, Charlie and Hilda purchased and lived in three different homes in Piqua, Ohio. Hilda's health gradually worsened, and she went through multiple surgeries. Whether she was in the hospital or in a nursing home, Charlie faithfully visited every day. When she was eventually moved permanently to a nursing home in Troy, 20 minutes south of Piqua, He found a low-income third-floor apartment across the street. He never missed a day trekking over to visit her, including in the midst of rain and snowstorms, and he was with her the day she died. He lived alone for the next 10 years, continuing to use door-to-door transportation that was available to the handicapped. One day, while living in Troy, shortly after joining a local spa, I was there to exercise and swim. Others told me about the blind man on the other side of the curtain in the dressing room. I noticed Charlie's sign-up sheet that he was free for an hour, so I got dressed and offered to take him for a walk. Looking down, I saw a robin's egg lying on the ground, and picking it up, I laid it in Charlie's hand. The robin embryo was still living and caused the egg to move. Charlie loved it and told me that no one had ever done that for him. After that, I began to get massages, continuing for 3 years. Sometime after I was divorced from my husband of 28 years, Charlie asked me if I would like to go to a church pot pie dinner with him. No, I replied, I'm not ready. He was quite disappointed because in church the previous week, God told him to pour his booze down the sink because there would be an angel on his table. Well, 2 weeks later, I was ready for a date, and I introduced him to Lamb at a Greek restaurant. We began dating, and forever after, he called me Angel. Always in the back of my mind were my mother's words, "You aren't going to marry a blind man, are you?" This came when I was a freshman in college at Capital University in Bexley, Ohio. I had had 3 dates with a musician who had been blind since birth because he was given too much oxygen when born prematurely. I never asked my mother why she had said that, but that relationship didn't continue, so it was a moot point. In my early years as a substitute teacher, I had a blind child in my 4th grade class. I knew nothing about working with such a child. However, she was quite intelligent and independent, using Braille textbooks, a typewriter, and a Braille writer. In gym class, I began a series on volleyball and thought it was too dangerous for her to play, so I asked her to help me keep score. This brought out an angry response. She turned, found her way to the door, and using her cane, she walked home. She told her mother I wouldn't let her play. Well, mother came back with her and assured me she would handle it in her own way. That day I learned a valuable lesson. Ask someone who is blind if they can manage a given task, telling them the details of what's involved. I also learned about blindness from a young lady who taught a class for the visually impaired in the same school as I in Springfield, Ohio. We became friends. I loved visiting in the home of someone blind and watching how she managed. We would often go out to eat with her guide dog curled up under the table between our feet. The day we ate Greek, she discovered an anchovy in her mouth and was not happy. Another time we were at a pancake house, and she plopped a ball of butter on her tongue. Spitting it out, she begged me, "Please tell me these things." So from these lessons learned, I was not afraid of, quote-unquote, marrying a blind man. And in fact, I did. Charlie and I married in 1992. We stayed in Ohio for 4 years. And yes, my mother took Charlie up on his offer of giving her a massage. She came to the conclusion that Charlie, although blind, was a great son-in-law. Moving to Arizona was a major change for us. It was the place I had wanted to be most of my life, and finally I had a chance to live in this beautiful state. Charlie retired from giving body massages. His customers were very unhappy, and I packed up. We had a house to sell and planned a drive cross-country. First, we lived in Green Valley, south of Tucson, for 5 years. However, Charlie became overly dependent on me. There were no activities for the blind, nor was there transportation, so we decided it would be better to live in Tucson. We learned about SunVan for the handicapped, providing door-to-door transportation, and then the various opportunities for the blind. There's an organization called Southern Arizona Association for the Visually Impaired, and that's abbreviated SAVI, S-A-A-V-I. This was the first on the list, Charlie added to his knowledge by taking various classes for many years. Some were meant for the newly blind, but even though Charlie had been blind since age 10, he did pick up some new tips, such as having me mark appliances, including the washer, dryer, TV control, the dishwasher, microwave, and toaster oven. I had purchased a pliable substance that left a dot and set up a system where three dots meant hot or large, two dots meant medium, and one meant cold or small. I found my husband to be quite capable in handling many household tasks. He loaded and emptied the dishwasher, gathered the garbage and took it out, retrieved the mail and newspaper, and managed the laundry with my help and sorting. He never commented on colors I chose or pictures I hung on the wall. He rose earlier than me and would fix his cereal with toast using the microwave for the egg. Next, he would prepare my cereal and have it ready when he awakened me. Charlie and I had opportunity to travel extensively. We started with a small ship cruise to the Inside Passage of Alaska. We went cross-country using Amtrak to get to the embarkation point in Portland, Oregon. During the hours on the train, I read to him a book about Alaska, and using my voice, along with the motion of the train, I put him to sleep. We both loved the fresh air, and he felt the excitement when the first morning we woke up surrounded by icebergs. We joined a group going to the Holy Land. This was probably the hardest travel for both of us, but the reward made it worthwhile. I believe that Charlie was a good example and showed others that travel is possible for people who are blind. Using the white cane is the independent symbol of capability, plus it put others on the alert when it was obvious that he needed help. Our first night on this trip was almost a disaster. We had experienced extremely long travel time to arrive in Israel and spent our first night in a hotel in Tel Aviv. It seemed to me it was a good idea for each of us to take a Tylenol PM. Charlie had never had one. In the middle of the night, I heard a door close. After looking around the room and checking the bathroom, I found no Charlie. The door I heard had to be the one into the hallway. Looking out, in my nightgown, I saw him at the far end of the hall. With a loud but soft psst, I called his name. He heard me and started inch by inch in the right direction. However, he was turning the handle to every room along the way. Well, this was thankfully the only time he sleepwalked. We also did cruises to Hawaii, the Columbia and Snake River in Oregon, and several more in the Caribbean. A Disney cruise with my two sons and their families was surprisingly wonderful. I expected a lot of noise from children, but that was not the case. As a couple, we joined a Lions Club and helped with various projects. We became members of a church and were active in several groups. Charlie continued taking classes at the SAVI, that's the Southern Arizona Association for the Visually Impaired, and he advanced his cooking skills. He tried out some of the meals at home and was quite proud of himself. He took a large number of painting and craft classes, including helping with a wall mural, using clay, copper tooling, and sanding and glazing all sorts of vases and plates that were then fired in a kiln. His family and I treasure them. Wherever he was, he said something that made people smile and understand that their life was not over because they were blind or had developed vision loss. We heard about a new group forming for the blind and visually impaired. The name of the organization was Tucson Society of the Blind, the TSB. Well, the difference between SAVI and TSB was the leadership. SAVI was, as the title says, for the blind, with mostly sighted teachers. And TSB, the Tucson Society of the Blind, was of the blind. They offered weekly gatherings with speakers and many field trips. The board was made up of mostly blind and visually impaired members. Charlie's daughter and grandchildren live in Tennessee, and my two sons in Ohio. Every year we traveled east to visit, often driving cross-country with many motel overnights, since I was the only driver. Charlie was an easy traveler as long as he had his Sirius XM radio and his talking books. He took over the back seat. Only once did he get in serious trouble. I had gone down the hall of our motel to do laundry. Charlie had a bad habit of exploring the room whenever I was gone. He found a bag that appeared to be marshmallows, and he popped one into his mouth. It was a pod of detergent. I believe that people who are blind have more than five senses. Sight may be gone, but there is a sense of environment and nature that surprised me. Sounds not only measured in loudness, but also in distance and size of a room. The blind feel with their feet in ways I never thought of. When we lived in Ohio, Charlie could sense distance and tell me we were coming up on a particular exit. And he was right, most of the time. I don't recall him ever complaining about his blindness. Several times he mentioned he wished he could see my face and those of his family. Outward appearances meant little, although he did want to know what clothing I laid out for him each morning, and he often asked me what I was wearing. Charlie and I had been married almost 24 years the day he died, in November of 2016. That came after 3 days of non-stop activity. He didn't get up at his usual 6:30 a.m., and later when I checked on him, he was no longer on this earth. He had gone to be with the Lord. Marrying a blind man was perhaps the best decision I ever made, especially since that man was Charles Barnhart. Once again, this was titled He Don't See So Good, Charles Barnhart's Story, from the book by his wife Margaret Barnhart. The book's title is Inspirational Stories of the Visually Challenged. This is available on Amazon and maybe from your local library. Next, I have two topics of information for you which Charlie Barnhart found so helpful in his life. First, there'll be vision rehabilitation, and then we'll have a short section on paratransit. So first, what is vision rehabilitation? This comes from a website, visionaware.org. The term vision rehabilitation includes a wide range of professional services that can restore functioning after vision loss, just as physical therapy restores functioning after a stroke or other injury. Vision rehabilitation services allow people who have recently lost vision, people who are blind or have low vision, to continue to live independently and maintain their accustomed quality of life. Although your eye doctor is the professional you will likely turn to first when dealing with your own or with a family member's vision loss, it's important to note that many different kinds of vision rehabilitation services are available in addition to the eye care provided by your family doctor, by your ophthalmologist, optometrist, or even by your low vision specialist. In fact, your own doctor may not be aware of or may not offer to refer you to these comprehensive vision rehabilitation services, which are often provided through a state or not-for-profit rehabilitation agency at little or no out-of-pocket cost. So who provides vision rehabilitation services? Vision rehabilitation services for adults who have recently lost vision, are blind, or have low vision are provided by a team of specially trained professionals, which may include low vision therapists, orientation and mobility specialists, and vision rehabilitation therapists. That first term I use, low vision therapists, instruct individuals in the efficient use of remaining vision with optical devices, with non-optical devices, and even using assistive technology. They can help determine the need for environmental modifications in the home, in the workplace, or the school. Next, I mentioned orientation and mobility specialists. These are called the O&Ms. These people teach the skills and concepts that people who are blind or have low vision need in order to travel independently and safely in the home and out in the community. The O&Ms teach safe and independent indoor and outdoor travel skills, including the use of a long cane, electronic travel devices like GPS units, how to use public transportation, how to use a sighted guide, a human guide, and pre-cane skills. There was also something mentioned about vision rehabilitation therapists. These are the people that teach adaptive, independent living skills, enabling adults who are blind or have low vision to confidently carry out a range of daily activities. These are abbreviated CVRTs. Certified Vision Rehabilitation Therapists work with individuals in their homes, in rehabilitation facilities, and or employment settings. So what will I learn when I use a vision rehabilitation lessons and training? There are six that are mentioned here. First one, you will learn communication skills like reading and writing. You might learn Braille, and you will be learned how to do assistive computer technology. The second one, you will have counseling to help you, your spouse, your family members, and friends adjust to your vision loss. You will also learn about independent living and personal management skills like home modifications, home repairs, personal self-care, financial management, recreation and leisure activities, and simply using the telephone. Another thing you will learn is independent movement and travel skills. This is in addition to the O&M people. You will learn about moving safely outdoors and indoors, using transportation, using a long white cane. You will also learn low vision evaluations and training with low vision devices. This is the low vision examination by optics for driving, low vision optical devices, non-optical devices such as handheld magnifiers, special reading glasses, telescopes, and high-intensity lamps that can make the best use of remaining vision. These are what you will learn using a vision rehabilitation therapist. And one last thing they mention, vocational rehabilitation. If you're in the market getting back to work after a vision loss or breaking into the workplace as a job seeker with blindness or low vision, they will help you with including vocational evaluation and training, job modification, and restructuring and job placement. So I would strongly suggest that you ask about vision rehabilitation. The next topic, paratransit. This information came from Wikipedia. It's spelled P-A-R-A-T-R-A-N-S-I-T, paratransit. This is the term used in North America for transportation services that supplement fixed route mass transit by providing individualized rides without fixed routes or timetables. Paratransit services may vary considerably on the degree of flexibility they provide their customers. At the very simplest, they may consist of a taxi or a small bus that will run along a more or less defined route, stopping and picking up or discharging passengers on request. At the other end of the spectrum, fully demand-responsive transport, the most flexible paratransit systems offer on-demand, call-up, door-to-door service from any origin to any destination within the service area. In addition to public transit agencies, paratransit services may be operated by community groups or by not-for-profit organizations and even for-profit private companies at some time. Typically, minibuses are used to provide paratransit service. Most paratransit vehicles are equipped with wheelchair lifts or ramps to facilitate access. In the United States, private transportation companies often provide paratransit service in cities and metropolitan areas under contract to local public transportation agencies. Now, I mentioned here in Rochester, where this program originates, paratransit used to be called Lift Line. It's now called RTS Access. This stands for Regional Transit Service Access. You can apply at the website myrts.com, or you can call them at area code 585-224-8330. And this is for people in the Rochester, New York area. In other areas, ask about the word paratransit. Well, to summarize a little bit, hopefully the story of Charles Barnhart inspired you to find out more about vision rehabilitation and also about paratransit options where you live. Both can make you more independent. To end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. Lots of people want to ride with you in a limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. This was said by Oprah Winfrey. I'm sure you know Oprah. Everybody does. But do you know that her official birth name was Orpah, O-R-P-A-H, Oprah Winfrey? Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 78 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service, GARS. Hello, I'm Sonal Pathak, bringing you Shape and Women's Health magazines. I'll be reading from the March 2021 issue of Women's Health magazine. The first article is Flow and Grow by Amy Wilkinson. Jenna Dewan always thought slowing down would mess up her rhythm. Instead, the actress and dancer found an inner stillness that's made her a more grounded mother, partner, and person. Take a peek at her revamped routine. While most of us were busy scavenging for toilet paper and swapping sourdough starters, Jenna Dewan was in the middle of a more labor-intensive pandemic preparation, quite literally. The actress gave birth to her second child, a son, Calum Michael Rebel Kazee, with fiancé Steve Kazee, on March 6, 2020, just days before Los Angeles' stay-at-home order went into effect. I was in this postpartum haze bubble. Then a week later, everything just shut down, says Jenna. It was new, it was different, it was kind of scary, but we were all in it together. Jenna had already planned for a hunkering down period following Calum's birth, sticking to the same first 40 days model of postpartum rest and replenishment that she had used after the birth of her daughter, Everly, with ex-husband Channing Tatum in 2013. But what she hadn't planned for was a months-long isolation, especially considering how alone she had felt the first time around, giving birth to Everly in London, spending the first few weeks in an apartment with no Wi-Fi, then quickly transitioning to 15-hour shoot days on the set of Lifetime's Witches of East End. I had this grand idea that with this baby, I'm going to have friends and family over all the time, says Jenna. Talk about expectations and having to surrender. Leaning into unexpected curves has helped Jenna navigate a number of detours over the past 3 years. Splitting from Channing in 2018, building a new life as a single mom, reconnecting with Steve, whom she had met years earlier after one of his performances in the Broadway production of Once, and embracing new love. I got here by following the flow, says Jenna, reflecting on her journey. I've really been big on that. I know when I'm swimming upstream and fighting it. And so the self-professed free spirit has harnessed that submit and sink into it approach in pandemic life. Instead of getting bogged down with anxiety or fear, she's constantly looked for ways to swerve and grow through it all. Most noticeably, the past year finally forced Jenna to take a beat. She's been hustling since the early 2000s, kicking off her professional dance career on Janet Jackson's 2001 All For You tour. Full roles followed, including her 2006 breakout, Step Up. And the past 5 years, which have been especially busy for Jenna, including acting roles in The Resident, Berlin, I Love You, and Soundtrack, hosting gigs for Flirty Dancing and World of Dance, and production projects like Step Up, High Water. When Hollywood shut down last year, Jenna was left with a largely open calendar. I've learned for the first time what it means to be actually quiet and to be present, she says. I've never been a homebody, and I love it. Without external factors like work projects or lunch dates with friends to fill her up, Jenna turned her attention inward, establishing a new feel-good morning routine. By tending to her self-care early on, Jenna finds that she's able to give more to others throughout the day. So now, every morning after Calum wakes her and Steve up around 6:30 or 7 a.m., She feeds him and then feeds her own soul, starting with a 20-minute meditation session. Jenna has relied on Vedic meditation, a mantra-based practice similar to transcendental meditation, for years. She's so serious about it that she has a dedicated nook at home where her kids are not allowed. And it's where she's seated today as we talk. Sunk deep into an overstuffed beige chair, Jenna starts rifling through the belongings on the table behind her, a spiritual grab bag of sorts. She lifts up a fist-sized ivory crystal, an aplite, she tells me, which is good for connection and meditation. She shows me her super attractor journal, where she jots down her thoughts, her oracle cards, which she uses to set her intentions for the day, and the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, which she'll open to a random page and read from. Completing the collection is a chunky sage smudge, and of course, a candle. When I ask what scent soothes her, she pauses and laughs, telling me the candle is "This Smells Like My Orgasm" by Gwyneth Paltrow. It was a gift, Jenna says with a grin, and it smells good. Breath work is another big component of her mindfulness. After meditating, she'll often cycle through a holotropic breathing routine. 2 breaths in, 1 breath out. Set to music, which she says has been transformative. It's very effective for stress, says Jenna. You're creating this rush of oxygen to your brain, and it calms your nervous system. It can be a little uncomfortable at first, but once you get past that, you really open yourself up. Then, once centered, Jenna sweats it out. Her exercise of choice right now is Pilates. She logs 3 or 4 one-hour Zoom sessions a week with her instructor, Kim Carruthers. It gets you fit so fast, and you just feel stronger, says Jenna of her practice, which is transferred from the studio's reformer to a mat at home. The dancer in me really likes it because it activates the same muscles in my core, she continues. Especially after recovering from surgery, her C-section, she says you feel things just all start to go where they're meant to be. She's also become a fan of Isaac Boot's Instagram Live workouts, a high-energy combo of cardio and strength, which Jenna calls dancer wonderfulness. As dance studios are closed, Jenna has had to get her groove on in small gasps. An online class here, a TikTok routine there. Through it all, she keeps a perpetual rhythm in her home. I'm always dancing, even in the kitchen, she says. Calum laughs and smiles when I dance, especially when I give him a good hair whip. It's as if it's the funniest thing that ever happened. And Evie's always like, dance party time. When it comes to refueling, Jenna finds that her body does best with a mostly vegetarian diet. She follows an 80-20 approach, 80% of the time eating healthy and 20% of the time indulging. She starts every morning with a green smoothie, emphasis on the green, blending spinach, romaine, celery, cilantro, parsley, apple, banana, and lemon. For lunch and dinner, she's learned to keep it simple. In the beginning of quarantine, I was trying to cook more, but then people in the house were like, you've got a lot of strengths. I don't know if cooking is one of them. She's since pivoted to preparing and refrigerating nutritious meal components, like quinoa, roasted vegetables, and black beans, and letting her family combine them into entrees. She does take pride, however, in a dish her family calls the Jenna salad. It's a chopped medley of whatever vegetables are in the house, usually carrots, bell peppers, broccoli, avocado, and sometimes even sauerkraut, topped with a veggie burger and dressed with lemon, olive oil, salt, and pepper. It's delicious, says Jenna. The warm veggie burger makes you feel like you're eating more than a salad. As for indulgences, Jenna goes for salty over sweet, with favorites like nachos or french fries. She says, I don't deprive myself, but I try to choose healthy most of the time. That balanced approach is just one more example of the laid-back, go-with-the-flow attitude that has seen Jenna through a myriad of milestones, including her most recent biggie in December, turning 40. As Jenna sees it, life has only gotten more fulfilling. I feel better in my skin. I feel more grounded in my body, she says. I feel excited for this next decade and what's available to create. Even in this crazy year, I still have that feeling. As Jenna looks to the future, she set a few goals for herself, namely producing more projects through her company, Everheart Productions, and continuing to grow personally. But as with all things, she recognizes that some of that ultimately will be left up to fate. You can't really control how life is going to look. You just know how you want to feel, says Jenna. I am in no way at that point where I'm like, I've got it all figured out. I'm still learning more about myself every single day. What I want, how I want to experience it, all of that is in flux. I'm not one of those people who thinks a change doesn't happen. Instead, I own it, I'm happy with it, and I'm excited to see what develops from it. Spoken, as ever, like a true free spirit who's mastered the art of embracing the unknown. That was Flow and Grow by Amy Wilkinson. Next is Mask Up. The next time you get the urge to take off your mask while working out, think again. Not only can these little accessories, scratch that, necessities, stop the spread of you-know-what, but they actually allow for a solid sweat session, according to new research. Yes, wearing a mask had no effect on power or endurance in a cycling test, per an International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health study. And that was true whether people wore surgical face masks or cloth ones. Of course, this doesn't mean they always feel awesome in the moment. The mask forces your respiratory system to work harder, says Francis Adams, MD, a pulmonologist at NYU Langone Health, which means you'll score extra lung training. If you just can't deal, make sure to keep your mask dry to ease airflow. That means packing extras for long runs so you can swap them out, says trainer Dacia Einhorn, CPT, and breathing only through your nose to create fewer water droplets. Weight training isn't as hard on your lungs, but take longer breaks between sets if you need to. Next is Have a Ball. Doing the same ab moves can feel staler than an old protein bar. Liven things up with a mini exercise ball. Tuck it behind your back while doing sit-ups, or put it between your thighs to engage your deep core muscles during bridges, says Danielle Kaita Taguchi. Her go-to moves, crisscrosses with leg extensions. Lie face up with knees bent and shins parallel to floor. Use left elbow to pin a ball against right thigh, then place hands behind head, torso rotated right, and shoulders off the floor. Hold as you extend left leg to 45 degrees above floor, and then bring it back. Do 3 sets of 12 reps per side. Hip bridge to inner thigh pulse. Lie face up with legs bent, feet flat on floor, and knees over ankles. Place ball between lower thighs. Squeeze lightly as you lift hips, then lower. That's 1 rep. Do 3 sets of 20. On the final rep of each set, pause at the top. Squeeze the ball 20 times. Curl with chest opener. Sitting on the floor with knees bent and feet flat, hip width apart, place the ball at the base of the shoulder blades and lean back, bringing head to mat, hands behind head. Exhaling, flex torso forward, then inhale and lower back down. That's 1 rep. Do 3 sets of 20. Next is This Move is 100. If you're looking for an abs day shakeup, look no further than the Pilates 100. This classic mat move targets your deepest core muscles to stabilize your entire midsection and limit low back pain. Why the name? Well, once you're in position, you'll pump your arms 100 times for a serious burn, giving you a solid goal to work toward if you can't get it in one go. The steps. 1. Lie face up on the floor with arms at sides and legs straight. 2. Lift your shoulders and arms off the floor and raise your legs 45 degrees. 3. Pump straightened arms for 100 reps or until you need a break, inhaling for 5 pumps and exhaling for 5. Watch for a full body bounce. Isolate your arms when pumping. Nothing else should move. Watch for lower back pain. Raise your legs higher if you feel your back working, because it shouldn't be. If you're new to the move, adjust your legs so knees are bent 90 degrees and shins are parallel to the floor. But for a next level burn, lower your legs closer to the floor for a bigger challenge. Next is jaw dropper. Quick check. Rub the spot where your jaw meets your ears while opening and closing your mouth a few times. If you feel stiff back there or hear a clicking sound, you wouldn't be the only one. In recent months, dentists have noticed an uptick in bruxism. Clenching or grinding of teeth, causing pain there and in the temporomandibular joint, the TMJ for short. Why? For starters, the most obvious, stress, which we've all got plenty of right now, and has been linked to clenching and pain in the area, says Helen Choi, DDS, an orthodontist at Trend Dental in New York City. Plus, some of Choi's patients have been clenching while wearing a mask. The ear loops can affect nerve sensitivity in the region. And FYI, women tend to experience TMJ more than men, possibly due to hormones or higher levels of anxiety overall. Here are a few soothing salves. 1. Use a hot or cold pack for 10 to 20 minutes, 2 or 3 times per day, depending on your ouch level. If your jaw feels tender and inflamed, go the brisk route. If the problem feels like tightness, apply heat. 2. Put your tongue on the roof of your mouth without touching your chompers whenever your mouth is just chilling. This will relax your jaw and chewing muscles, says Choi. 3. If those DIY fixes don't help, call your dentist, who may prescribe a muscle relaxant, create a night guard, or recommend a procedure like Botox to freeze tense muscles and soothe your pain. It's a super common and effective fix. Next is check you later. Putting off projects went viral on TikTok, with users filming themselves delegating draining tasks to future me, a better equipped self who'll figure it out. While that may be okay sometimes, there may be other points when you just need to get it done. Delaying is often a coping strategy linked to feelings that come with a tough task, for example, resentment. And those will still be there later, says Tim Peichel, PhD, an associate professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa, and author of Solving the Procrastination Puzzle. Handle this habit. 1. Do schedule. Jot down your plan to go for a run or organize your kitchen. It'll make it more real, especially if your schedule has been a little less defined during the pandemic. As an incentive, work in rewards, such as watching an episode of a show once you're done. 2. Don't go big. If the whole project feels overwhelming, focus on a low-stakes item that still moves it forward, like sending an email. This takes the attention off your emotions and puts it onto the action. Then take a stab at another tiny to-do, then another one, and then another one. Way to go, present you. Next is let it go. Say bye-bye to all the downer thoughts that live rent-free in your brain. Studies show that the more you ruminate, the higher your risk for mental woes. In her new book, Your Fully Charged Life, author Megan Murphy shows you how to push past obsessing and into positivity. Here are 2 snippets to make you smile. Reroute your brain. You have the power to reframe the things that scare you. Those coached to think of giving a speech as a challenge, not a threat, got an energy boost that helped them complete the task, per a study in mindfulness. Can you approach your next presentation as something that makes you better? Bet so. Switch it up. Murphy's psyche shifting technique. Yes, but phrases. Muddled through a meeting? Yes, but. You aced your intro. Scared you injured yourself on that last lift? Yes, but you've gotten so much stronger since you started training. Recognize that it's awful, Then try to find one thing about it that is at least all right, says Murphy. Next is strap in. Add to your arm party with a piece that delivers more than just stylish vibes. Faithful fans of beaded anxiety bracelets say the strung together pink quartz, turquoise, amethyst, and or other stones help them relieve stress and anxiety. The how is rooted in Chinese medicine. The beads supposedly apply pressure to points said to release happy healing chemicals, kind of like acupuncture. FYI, there is no published evidence that these work, but experts say they're harmless. Nina Ellis Hervey, PhD, a psychologist in Texas, says use them as a reminder to stay calm and recenter. But they shouldn't be your only go-to for anxiety. That's what therapy is for. Next is Cuddle Buddy. There's nothing wrong with sleeping in your significant other's old college t-shirt. In fact, you may sleep better when you're wrapped in the scent of a loved one, says research in psychological science. For the 2020 study, more than 150 people made a makeshift pillowcase of a tea that had either been used by their partner, donned by a stranger, or not worn at all. People believed they slept better with their partner's scent, and they did indeed toss and turn less, as recorded by their sleep trackers. Next is chew on this. With all the changes your body goes through during pregnancy, such as larger breasts, intense cravings, and swelling feet, what's happening with your pearly whites probably doesn't get much thought. But your mouth undergoes a major transition when you're growing a baby, all thanks to fluctuating hormones, which can potentially lead to more cavities. Here's your plan for each stage. In the first trimester, this is the time to embrace a less abrasive paste for sensitive mouths. Your gums are more easily irritated now, so you may feel pain after brushing, even if you never used to. Plus, these formulas are easier on enamel, which can take a hit if you've got morning sickness. Second trimester, hormonal changes cause inflammation, which means plaque may be building up by now. Floss morning and night before you brush. And don't freak if your sink gets a little bloody. Even if you're an avid flosser, your gums are likely to bleed, but they'll go back to normal. Third trimester. Late pregnancy heartburn is a thing. Oil pulling, like swishing coconut oil in your mouth for 5 minutes after brushing, an Ayurvedic method some swear by, could help reduce damage by coating teeth with a slippery barrier that may prevent acid from sticking. Next is 1 in 5. Every woman wants to fall head over heels in love, with her birth control. Sadly, that's not our reality. 1 in 5 birth control users said they would switch if cost wasn't an issue, a study in contraception revealed. Finding birth control you like requires trial, error, and accessibility, says OBGYN Jessica Shepherd. Planned Parenthood is your bread-and-butter stop for less costly birth control, insurance or not. But telehealth companies like Nurx, Pandia Health, and Hers can hook you up with a cheap prescription too, and hospitals and med schools often offer free IUDs and implants. Call them. Next is setting the tone. For Lauren Malian, CEO of the startup Digital Undivided, which helps boost women entrepreneurs in the Black and Latinx communities. The morning hours are a feast for the senses with chill music, sweet aromas, and cozy cuddles. My day begins around 8 a.m. when I open a window to let some fresh air in. Then it's off to my kids' rooms to snuggle with my son Jaden and daughter Chloe for 15 minutes each and ask them what's on their mind. We have a soundtrack in the background, usually soft jazz and neo-soul. It keeps the right energy around me. Our house also has a signature scent. It's lavender and geranium-based with hints of magnolia and hibiscus, a sweet, welcoming smell. I always try to get in a workout, even a 20-minute ride on my Peloton. Moving my body lights me up from the inside out. I also strength train with B Be Exceptional Fitness 4 times a week. Next, I shower using a coconut oil-based body wash. For my face, I love Cetaphil Oil Removing Foam Wash to combat shine and remove dirt, and Urban Skin RX Super Sea Brightening Serum. As a woman of color, a product that helps me combat hyperpigmentation is key. Breakfast is my bridge from self-care time to full throttle zone. Usually a homemade juice with fresh ginger, cayenne, honey, and turmeric, or a protein shake that I drink during my first work meeting of the day. I never think of my mornings as something to survive or make it through. They really do something for me. Next is Alicia Keys. Get her glow. I shine at full wattage. I'm a big believer in mantras. The more you hear it, the more you believe it. You've got to say what you want, and you have to say it out loud. I shine at full wattage means we have to remind ourselves to shine enough. No dimming down, no holding back. I've realized that I need space for myself in the morning and at night. I'm big on rituals. I never miss them. I light a candle and set an intention. Right now, it's about filling up my well so that I can continue to fill others. When I'm super stressed, my skin issues spring up. So when people say, "Wow, you look great," or "Your skin is beautiful," it's because I gave time to myself to do that routine. Her beauty lineup. Soul Soother. I add this to my bath or shower to give me an extra boost of relaxation. These oils get me in a calmer space. Stress Away Essential Oil Blend, $42 at youngliving.com. Moisture Maker. This is not only beautiful and hydrating, but light and simple. When you put it on, it doesn't feel greasy. It makes you radiant. Keys Soul Care Skin Transformation Cream, $30 at ulta.com. Curl Keeper. I put my hair through a lot, so a hair mask that I can leave on is essential for me. This one is my go-to, as it nourishes my curls. Go-To Cola Natural Spring Hair Mask, $42 at gotocolausa.com. Next is Breakthrough. PE Nation founders and friends Pip Edwards and Claire Tregoning. For 5 years, Pip and Claire sat side by side at the Australian fashion label Sass & Bide, and despite their very different personalities, Claire is quieter while Pip is more outspoken, the two clicked instantly. "We had an amazing flow and really respected each other's strengths," says Pip. Their working relationship developed into a friendship, and in 2016, the duo launched their active wear brand, PE Nation, which has since become a global sensation, reaching cult status with fans in the U.S. As busy moms, they wanted fashion-forward pieces that were functional for a school run and spin class, and didn't see what they wanted in the market, so they created it. Despite working in a high-stress field, Pip and Claire keep their partnership solid by agreeing to never compete with each other. "There's no ego," says Pip. Another point of alignment? Their shared belief in the power of exercise. Whether Pilates for Pip or swimming for Claire. Yep, sweat is always in style for these two. Pip says, "One of the best pieces of advice I ever received is from my dad. He says the grass is greener where you water it. In other words, don't compare yourself to anyone else. Water your own yard and the results will come." Claire notes, "I use breathing techniques to fight anxiety. I also do a cold shower every morning and mix in ice baths sometimes. In the chilly water, I focus on keeping my breath slow. When you really think about it, the intended effect comes easier." That was Breakthrough. That concludes today's readings from Shape and Women's Health magazines. This has been Sonal Pathak for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we continue our series of Academy Award-winning films. This year, the Academy Awards ceremony is April 25th. Through April 24th, each Saturday, we will air movies from each decade that won the Oscar for Best Picture. This week, we're to the 60s as we air the audio-described 1962 classic, Lawrence of Arabia.